Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Part 4, Chapter 20 of Anna Karenina. I don't think these two, K and A, are going to stay together. Thoughts? Andal was right, says I am Norwegian. Anna is repulsed by Alexei, still. I called it. I love being right. Doesn't happen often, so allow me to relish in my rightness. Poor guy, he's the only one who seemed to grow in the right direction from the experience. Nifty-rific, I just about always have socks on, even when I'm asleep. It's cold here though, even inside the heating pump has a hard time keeping up sometimes. I'm thinking Nifty-rific might have made some kind of a comment about socks at some point else in this conversation. Let me have a look. Nifty-rific, this is referring to yesterday's podcast that I did in my socks and underwear. Underwear, socks, and hair. Don't know how you, Andrew Lewis, can stand socks on your feet without the absolute necessity of wearing shoes to go somewhere. Are you one of those people that always has something on your feet? Not really. I do bare feet occasionally, but yeah, I do often have socks on when I'm inside in the house. I just think it feels nicer. Then, like, I don't know, feeling all the stuff on the floor. Not that my floors are covered in stuff, but, you know, you walk around, you feel like grains of sand or whatever. Not that there's sand on my floor, but what am I talking about? I don't know. I just like to have socks on. Keeps my feet cozy. Even though yesterday was stinking hot, I think I had socks on for most of the day. Do you sleep wearing socks? Absolutely not. I go to bed wearing socks, and then I take them off. And there's usually one or two pairs of socks on the floor next to my bed at any given time. You know, I pick them up every day or so. Probably makes me sound like a real grot. Like, there's socks on my floor, and there's, like, sand. There's no sand on my floor. I vacuum my house often. And I don't leave dirty clothes lying around. It's just a sock thing because I get into bed wearing socks and then I take them off. So they're still there in the morning. Cool? Good. Do you sleep wearing socks? I can't. Yeah, no, I can't. Are your feet, like, super soft and uncalloused? No, normal feet, I would say. But I suppose they might be soft because, you know, when I run around, if I walk on, like, gravel in bare feet, it's really not painful, but it's a little bit painful. Like, it's really unpleasant. I'm like, my feet are too sensitive for this. Little jabs from stones. And I wonder, how do these kids do it? They just run around in bare feet and nothing seems to bother them. Maybe I do have soft and sensitive feet. Anyway, I'm sure no one cares about this, so let's talk about something else. Nifty-rific says, Nifty-rific is really stuck on this feet thing. I bet you have lovely soft feet, Nifty-rific said to I Am Norwegian. Lord, I can't stand having anything on my feet ever, and they are positively hideous. Socks are suffocating. I only own 3 pairs, and they are thin cotton, ankle height. Only wear them at work when I have to wear a sneaker. Wow. Alright, you're like anti-socks. Amazing. Where was this comment about my... Ah, there, I missed a bit. I missed a bit in Nifty-rific's comment that I accidentally skipped past. I remember your foul slippers, says Nifty-rific. Just when I'm trying to defend myself as not being a grot, I'm very hygienic and clean. You bring up my foul slippers from that one time that my slippers started to smell really, really bad. I think the mistake I was making there was wearing the slippers without socks, so barefoot in the slipper. And they were a cheap slipper, so they didn't breathe very well. And so I suppose they got sweaty, and then that eventually started to smell bad. And so I had to throw those slippers out. out of character. Again, that's out of character for me. I'm not a smelly person. I'm not a sand on the floor of my house kind of person. Just want to get that straight. Anyway, should we... Maybe I'll read a comment that's actually about this chapter. Well, there's other comments that aren't about this chapter. Let's go with a chapter-based comment, and then we'll go back to some non-chapter-based comments. Fun facts about wet nursing, says Swims to the Moa Fishy. A wet nurse is a lactating woman who breastfeeds a child who is not her own. Once a highly organized and well-paid profession, wet nurses had all but disappeared by the 1900s because of the invention of infant formula and feed bottles. Aristocratic women commonly hired wet nurses, as breastfeeding was seen as unfashionable. Wet nursing was a common career choice for poor women among the lower classes. In many cases, wet nurses were required to register and undergo medical exams. Yep. That's what a wet nurse is. Kind of a weird thing, isn't it? Is it gross? It's not gross, is it? I don't know why I think it's gross, but it's not gross. It's completely normal. I think the thing that's weird about it is, like, if it's the baby's own mother's milk, it seems very normal. But someone else's unrelated milk, for some reason to me that seems odd. I don't know why. Like, it's like, now it's like cannibalism rather than a mother and an infant. It's not quite cannibalism. I might be exaggerating a bit. Okay, let's read a chapter. Okay. Vinny Too Cool says, rereading the last paragraph of this chapter again, I don't know where I would stand. Modern sensibilities say Karenin should do what the world expects of him, but perhaps he is right and is thinking that it would be too devastating for kids and all parties involved. Simply Productive says, I currently don't think there's any chance they'll stay together. I'm betting this is a temporary respite and she goes right bloody back to Vronsky. After all, who picks broccoli over chocolate cake? Certainly not fickle women, and Anna is a fickle woman. Now, I'm not saying I think Vronsky is chocolate cake, just that Anna does. If she had any empathy for Karenin, she would see that though he is not emotional, he isn't heartless. He's like a Shrek ogre, an onion with layers. But most of those layers make you cry. Lol. Ooh, good one. Good analogy. A couple of analogies. I like the chocolate cake and broccoli one. I'm picking broccoli recently because I am calorie counting because I am overweight. I need to stop talking about myself in this podcast because I make myself sound awful. I'm just this big, fat, smelly, unhygienic person with socks on at all times, and I'm hairy. Cool. Enjoy that. Ah, golly. Simply Productive. Is this... Oh, okay, we got the scoop here. I think this is... Yesterday, Simply Productive was talking about a TIFU, which stands for Today I Effed Up. Right, about an awkward date. And Simply Productive has given us, a summary. I'll just sum up my love despair briefly. I grew up with Josh as our mother's bosom friends. I don't know what bosom friends means. He and I are close in age, only 2 years apart. He is wickedly intelligent, used to be a snowboard instructor, lived in the US Virgin Islands until he was maybe seven or so, has a spattering of freckles, and is devastatingly handsome and always has been. So asking him out is sort of like a monkey trying to get a human to fall in love with it. I had a dream of him out of nowhere. It was a very naughty dream. Ooh, the kind that makes you embarrassed when you wake up. I haven't seen him in ages, and since we turned 14, we've only seen each other a handful of times anyway. But I had the brilliant idea to message him to see if he would be interested. I phrased it with Jordan Peterson as the intro topic, since that's the book his dad brought to give to my mum when I last saw him. Now Josh is in his master's degree, so maybe it's my own fault for leading in for catching up over coffee with his thoughts about Peterson. I happen to be fascinated by Peterson, so it'll be lovely. But there's absolutely no possibility that Josh thought I was aiming for a date. He asked for talking points, as he hasn't read the book recently, mentioned meeting just off his campus, but not on campus because the topics of the discussion will be controversial. And today, rescheduled as he has been called in to babysit his nephew. I should have just out and said I wanted to catch up, but I was so nervous about him asking how it came up and didn't want to bring up the dream. Good God, could you imagine? I broke three of my own dating rules. 1, always be as upfront as possible. 2, don't ever date childhood crushes as you will crash and burn. And 3, don't discuss politics on a first date. Oh, you did F up indeed. I think maybe just remedy it with a big old dose of honesty. Like, you know what? I don't care about this Jordan Peterson book. I just want to go on a date with you. I mean, you might care about the book, but maybe downplay the Jordan Peterson book bit of the plan a little bit. Very cool. All right. Well, good luck to you. I hope you get your date. Let us know what happens. Although it is a childhood friend, so you're still going to be breaking that rule. Are you prepared to break that rule? Let's read. I'm trying very hard, by the way, to feel okay. But I'm really quite angry. Let me tell you something. Let me vent. I'm sick. I've been sick for about a week. And I'm also trying to make some money to get out of some of these debts I've got. I've got these stupid, like, fines and bills and things, you know. You know how life gets. I'm behind. And I just cannot get ahead. My small business is sort of wound up for the year. So I won't really make any money there until the start of next year. Which is fine because I'm also an Uber driver. So I can just do some Uber driving, get ahead. I've also been doing a bit of work down at a winery on weekends. So all is good. So this week, even though I've been sick, every day I've gotten up and I've gone, it's finally the end of year. It's starting to get warm weather, but I'm going to make at least $100 per day Uber driving for the rest of the month. That's my goal. And so I've been doing that all week, and it's been gone pretty slow, but I've been getting that $100. And anyway, tonight I went and did it, got my $100 pretty quickly, and then I got another fare, and I'm like, do I want to do this last one? I'm pretty close to my house. I could just go home. And I called them up and they said they were going to blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's quite far. That's a good $60 fare. All right, I'll do it. So I took them, dropped them off. And then I was like, well, now I'm, you know, more than half an hour away from home. But I've made a good chunk of money today. So I'll just cruise home, put a podcast on, get a Coke Zero, sip it on the way home. No problem. About 5 minutes from my house, light goes orange. I cruise through, no problem. Double flash of lights. Turns out I was going about 15 k's over the speed limit because they changed the bloody speed limit. So that's, in Australia, 15 k's over the speed limit is about $400 fine. Maybe more, 450 even. They basically just go, oh, you were speeding a bit. We're going to take off you a week's wages. It was past midnight by this point. The roads were empty. It was like a 6-lane highway, which in about 100 meters goes to 80 k's. But at that point, it was 60 k's. So anyway, I screwed it up. So that's what just happened to me about half an hour ago. Been grinding it out all week. And then I basically just lost it all. Because I just wasn't paying attention, you know? I suppose that's what it was. I wasn't hooning. I was driving at just a normal, comfortable pace, but I got. Anyway, very, very frustrating. That's my woes at the moment. So you can support the podcast at patreon.com/thehemingwaylist. And I will love you forever. Anyway, that was the last thing oh my God. I just realized how bad this podcast is tonight. I really do apologize. I'm talking about my feet. I'm talking about how bad I smell. I'm talking about money issues, which no one wants to hear me whine about that. Let's just read Anna Karenina. Let's do this. Chapter 21. Before Betsy had passed out of the dining room, Oblonsky, who had just come from Ilyesiev's, where newly arrived oysters were to be had, met her in the doorway. "Ah, princess, what a pleasure to meet you," he began. "And I have been at your house." "We met only for a moment, as I am just going," said Betsy. "We meet only for a moment, as I am just going," said Betsy, smiling and putting on her glove. "Excuse me. Wait a little, princess, before putting on your glove. Let me kiss your hand. There is nothing for which I am more thankful than for the revival of the old custom of hand kissing." And he kissed Betsy's hand. "When shall I see you again? You are not worth it," said Betsy, smiling. "Yes, I am well worth it, because I have become the most serious of men. I not only settle my own, but other people's family affairs," said he with a significant glance. "Oh, I am very glad," said Betsy, as at once understanding that he referred to Anna. She returned to the dining room with him, and they stood together in a corner. "He will kill her," said Betsy in a significant whisper. "This is impossible, impossible." "I'm very glad you think so," returned Oblonsky, shaking his head with an expression of grave, woe-begone commiseration. "That is why I have come to Petersburg." "The whole town is talking of it," she said. "It is an impossible situation. She is fading away, fading away. He does not understand that she is one of those women who cannot play with their feelings. One of two things must happen. Either he must take her away, acting energetically, or he must divorce her. But all this is stifling her." "Yes, yes, exactly," said Oblonsky, sighing. "I have come because of that. I mean, not entirely because of it. I have been made chamberlain, and had to tender my thanks. But the chief thing is to get this affair settled." "Well, then, may God help you," said Betsy. Having seen her down to the hall and kissed again her hand, a little above the glove, just where the pulse beat, and having told her some rubbish so daring that she did not know whether to be angry or to laugh, Oblonsky went to his sister's room. He found her in tears. Though he was overflowing with high spirits, Oblonsky immediately fell into a sympathetic and romantic mood suited to hers, inquired after her health, and asked how she had spent the morning. "Very, very badly. This afternoon and morning, and all other days, past and future," she replied. "I think you give way to melancholy. You should rouse yourself and look life straight in the face. I know it is hard, but I have heard it is said that women love men for their very faults," Anna began suddenly, "but I hate him for his virtues. I cannot live with him. Try and realize it. Even his looks have a physical effect on me and drive me beside myself. I cannot live with him. What am I to do? I was unhappy and thought it impossible to be more so, but I could never have imagined such a terrible position as I am in now. Will you believe it, knowing that he is a kind and generous man, that I am not worth his little finger? Nevertheless, I hate him. I hate him for his generosity, and there is nothing left for me but—" She was going to say death, but he did not let her finish. "You are ill and excited," said he. "Believe me, you are greatly exaggerating the case. There is nothing so very terrible about it." Oblonsky smiled. No one else in his place, having to deal with such despair, would have permitted himself to smile, for a smile would have appeared callous. But in his smile there was so much kindness and almost feminine tenderness that it was not offensive, but soothing and pacifying. His soft, comforting words and smiles had a soothing and calming effect as almond oil, and Anna soon felt this. "No, Steva," said she, "I am lost, quite lost, and even worse than lost. I am not lost yet. I cannot say all is finished. On the contrary, I feel that all is not yet finished. I am like a tightly strung cord which must break, but all is not finished. It will all end in some dreadful manner." "Oh, no. One can loosen the string gently. There is no situation from which there is no escape. I have been thinking and thinking, only one." Again he understood from her frightened face that she considered death to be the only escape, and did not let her finish. "Not at all," he replied. "Listen, you can't see your position as I can. Let me tell you my frank opinion." Again he smiled, his almond oil smile. "I will begin at the beginning. You married a man 20 years older than yourself. You married without love and without having known love. That was a mistake, I grant." "A dreadful mistake," said Anna. "But again, I say that that is an accomplished fact. Next, let us admit that you had the misfortune to fall in love, not with your husband. That is a misfortune, but that too is an accomplished fact. Your husband has accepted that and forgiven you." He paused between each sentence, expecting her to make objections, but she made no answer. That is so. Now comes the question. Can you go on living with your husband? Do you wish it? Does he wish it? I don't know at all. But you yourself say you cannot endure him. No, I did not say so. I take back those words. I know nothing. I understand nothing. Yes, but let me... You can't understand. I feel that I am flying headlong over some precipice, but must not even try to save myself, and I can't. Never mind. We'll spread out something to catch you. I understand that you cannot take it upon yourself to express your wishes and feelings. I have no wishes at all, except that everything were at an end. And he sees that and knows it. Do you think it weighs on him less than on you? You suffer and he suffers. What can come of that? While a divorce would solve the whole problem, said Oblonsky, not without difficulty expressing his main idea and looking at her significantly. She replied only by shaking her cropped head, but by the expression of her face, suddenly illuminated with its old beauty, he saw that the only reason she did not wish for this solution was because it seemed to her an impossible happiness. I am dreadfully sorry for you both. How happy I should be if I could arrange it, continued Oblonsky, now smiling more boldly. But don't say a word. If only God helps me to say what I feel, I shall go to him. Anna looked at him with dreamy, shining eyes, but said nothing. There we go, another chapter down. Thanks for listening to one of the not as good episodes of this podcast. Your patience is remarkable. I'll see you tomorrow.